Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We'll be playing video game and video game music with me, your host, David Collins. I hope you enjoy and listen to some great tunes. So, to start the show off, this is a tune that suddenly popped into my head when I was thinking of what sort of tunes I should let all you guys hear out there in Radioland, and so here it is. So I hope you liked that little tune. That was called Theme of the Chow, and it was from the video game Sonic Adventure by Sonic Team, and the music, it's kind of tricky to find out who exactly composed it, but I do know that the soundtrack of Sonic was composed in general by Gen Senui, Kenichi Toki, and Fumi Kumatani. So as you can see, it's a nice, breezy, upbeat little tune, and actually, it actually plays a kind of a side role in the game of Sonic Adventure itself. I think I've briefly talked about Sonic Adventure before on this show and played a bit of music from it, but Sonic is basically was Sonic's triumphant, well, maybe not complete debut, but just his first major game in as a platform game back in 3D, like the first game of the 3D era that Sonic the Hedgehog was in. It's like Sonic Adventure is to Sonic what like Mario 64 was to Mario. So he entered in the game, it was the full 3D environment, and of course keeping in track with all the classic Sonic, you were a blue hedgehog and you ran through all these different stages and you jumped and defeated Robotnik, who was basically having this great big plan that involved capturing the world, only this time is using the Chaos Emeralds. So it was a fun game. People said that the game was pretty broad because you weren't just playing as Sonic. You could also choose one of six characters, each of who had their own gameplay style, like Tails, who was like flying and could race, and like E101, who was basically a robot. You actually controlled one of Robotnik's robots for the first time in the game. And there was a lot of stuff to the game. It was very bright, colourful. I think it had great music, although for some people out there disagree for reasons that I cannot completely comprehend. And one of the interesting side things to this game was the chow rearing. You see, Sonic Adventure came around a time when Tamagotchis were pretty damn popular. Now, as you remember, Tamagotchis were basically these small little portable electronic LCD devices. They were basically black and white screens like a calculator or something, but had these nice little cute little pixelized creatures in them, and you took them everywhere, and, you know, every so often you press a button that would feed them, or then you'd see if they were asleep, or sometimes you'd open up your Tamagotchi to look on your pet, and you'd realize they'd taken a great big dump of shite right in the middle of your screen, and so you'd have to press the clean up button to clean it up. I wasn't one of the people who was caught in with the Tamagotchi craze. I got one and it was fine, and like eventually I'm sure he died and I sort of wasn't really caught up in it. And then I read this great little article about this kid who wanted to get a dog, and his mom said you can't be responsible with pets. So he grabbed a Tamagotchi and kept going for something like a couple of months and said, "See, mom, I am responsible for a pet," and the mom relented. So it was kind of fun with that. But of course, there was a huge craze with this one. People all over the place were buying these little Tamagotchis, these little digital pets they could carry and look after and feed and watch as they showed these great big hearts above their head, which showed that they loved you and everything. And even though I wasn't one of those people, I could sort of see, wait a sec, the idea of having these simulated pets that you look after is kind of a big deal. Indeed, of course, that deal has never quite gone away. There's been everything from Neopets to Nintendogs, which have shown how popular that such an idea like that can be. But so with Sonic Adventure, they introduced these nice little tiny creatures called Chao. They were basically generally blue. They had great big heads and small bodies. They were about like knee or at most like waist high. They often crawled around the place or jumped or ran about, and they said all these cute little words like Chow, chow. And as I've said in previous episodes, the voice of the Chow was actually Tomoko Sasaki, who has done who's actually composed a lot of music in Sega and in other companies, and has made music for games such as World of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, and also Feel the Magic XYXX. So essentially, they were very little cute little critters, and part of the little sub-games or mini-games or what have you of Sonic Adventure was that you could actually raise these little Chao. There'd be this places you could access in the game called Chao Gardens, and essentially you could see them crawl around and talk and swim, and you'd like shake coconut trees and get all these big fruits to fall off and feed them to it, and then you'd also defeat you could go off and defeat Badniks in the main game, these robots that contain all these animals, and if you save the animals and bring them back to the Chao, you can actually crossbreed the animals with the Chao so that suddenly you could change their appearance and also their abilities. You could also, which was what I did, take the Chao, put them on the visual memory unit. This was a memory card that was with the Sega Dreamcast, and then take it with you. But the thing with the visual memory unit was that it actually had a small LCD screen and controls, so you could actually see your little Chao and go and engage this little game called Chao Adventure, where you could see it walking and choose their destination, and you could even play games of memory with it. And every time you won a game of memory on the thing, the Chao would get a nice bit of fruit and their stats would increase. So it was pretty crazy. I mean, you'd play the game and get animals to work with the Chao, you'd actually look after them and pet them and everything in the Chao garden themselves, and then you'd put them onto a small little portable device that came with the Dreamcast and then carry it and look after them everywhere. So this is quite a departure from a blue hedgehog who runs around saving the world from an evil mad scientist, but there you go. That's it's kind of funny the surprise that the games can throw at you. So I was never hugely attached to the Chao, but now that I think about my school days of playing with the Chao, I guess I was a little more attached than I'm willing to admit. The Chao showed up in a few games afterwards, the Sonic Advance games on the Game Boy Advance, and in that case it was cool because with the Nintendo GameCube you could transfer the Chao from the Nintendo version of the Sonic games and then put them onto the Chao in the Game Boy Advance with a connection cable. And as I said, they also showed up in Sonic Adventure 2, where there was an extra twist where they could grow up to be either good or evil, or at least, you know, have a halo or else a devil theme. It depended on a lot of factors. But after that, they have kind of gone a bit subdued. I guess the craze kind of wore off and there hasn't been that many Chao going back in. The Chao kind of is a bit divisive issue. I mean, a lot of people really love it, just like the Tamagotchi. There are a lot of people who just, and everything else, they're just people who like having virtual pets and looking after them and everything. But I think a lot of other people are wondering, wait, you know, when you play a Sonic game, you want to just have fast-paced excitement and adrenaline, and growing up all these little creatures doesn't quite fit with the theme. But, I mean, it's to everyone's taste. Everyone's got their own opinion on this sort of stuff, and that's cool. I wouldn't mind seeing the Chao turn back and have a bit of fun with it, but it wouldn't be a major feature for me, unlike it would be for some people. Alright, and next I'm going to play music from a classic video game that is based on a classic movie. The movie itself was really, really big, and indeed, just fairly recently, one of the sequels to this movie was just recently released, despite the fact the original was released over 20 years ago. I'm just going to shut up now and play the music track. Sound like a plan? Oh, and excuse it if the music sounds a little tinny. Remember, they were dealing with different sound hardware back then, so you got to make some allowances. And so that music was from the video game Die Hard. And yes, it was based on the classic action movie Die Hard, which was released in 1988. And the video game was released about 2 years later on the Nintendo NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, effectively. The music was composed by Junichi Saito, and this is just basically the in-game music. And I'd just like to give a thanks to the Video Game Music Preservation Foundation Wiki, a website, because without them, I mightn't have actually known who composed the music. Essentially, there's not really any credits to the game, so it's kind of hard to find out who composed this sort of stuff. So, Die Hard from the NES. Is this an easy game? Well, see the title. It isn't. The game is hard. It's a top-down perspective where you take on the role of John McClane, just like in the movie, and you're trying to rescue your wife, just like in the movie, but unfortunately terrorists have invaded the building, just like in the movie. In fact, the game is a lot like the movie, and I actually have to give a lot of congrats to the game because it takes a lot of inspiration from the movie, a lot of the themes, a lot of the things, and just tries to integrate it to make the game very, very true. Nearly everything that the character does in the movie you can do to some extent in the game itself, and even small things like the flash grenades that are briefly shown like in one 10-second scene in the movie. You can actually pick those up and use them as an offensive on a regular basis in the video game. So the basic gist is you're in the building, you have largely only access to the first top floor, to a couple of top floors of the building, and you've got 40 terrorists. You've got to go around the building, defeating them all, and also put an end to their plan while also saving your wife. It sounds like a tough job, and my dear gosh, it is. Essentially, it's a top-down perspective. Very simple. pretty powerful for the NES. And also for the NES, you can't see around corners. You'd think that because it's top-down perspective, but no. Any area that you don't have a direct line of sight to is just shown in black, which makes it tricky because when you're running down a corridor, you never know what could turn around the next corner. Also, another thing, the terrorists are 40. There's no more, there's no less. Every time you defeat a terrorist, that's one terrorist you won't have to deal with later. And it actually gives a great effect to the game. It feels like, you know, it's not mattered. You're not dealing with an endless barrage of terrorists. It feels like the beginning of the game, you're masked with this huge problem, this whole task to solve. And you'll probably screw up the first time you try to solve it because, you know, first time in a video game, that's what you tend to do. But each time you go back to it, you get better and better, and you gradually, each terrorist you take, it's chipping away, until eventually there's only a handful left, and you know that the odds have turned, and that's finally the sense you get to where you're about to turn the tables on the bad guys. It's just a great film. It really gets the feeling from the movie across about dealing with overwhelming odds and just being able to inch yourself closer and closer to victory through whatever means, whether through air ducts or basically trying to make a mad dash for the ceiling to call from help and get help from the police, or even just doing what you can to just screw over the terrorists' plans and be able to slow them down enough to give you all the more time. It replicates a lot of areas from the film. You get to see, you know, the more office areas. You get to see the roof level. You mess around in air vents for a lot of the time, and you even get to see that zigzag table where John McClane makes a dash under and gets shot at by the guy. But although you don't get to do that in the video game, unfortunately. One of the whole things about the game is that you even get your feet damaged, just like in the movie. Your feet, you know, most of the time you replenish your health just by drinking soda cans or breaking open vending machines to get soda cans, and of course when your health gauge goes out, you die. But your feet also have this gauge, so just like in the movie, if you walk over glass too much, you'll actually end up, your feet will end up getting so injured, and you'll walk really, really slowly, and then you'll have to find a health kit to actually bandage your feet to get walking back to speed again. So it's kind of funny they even get that measure of vulnerability in the movie. And of course it even gets to and it all works as well. I mean, there's one level which sometimes you go up to where you walk in and it's just basically a whole bunch of like glass walls are all over the place, and meanwhile there are a bunch of terrorists shooting at you. So you've got options. Do you want to just take shots at them, or else do you want to dive out, shoot bullets everywhere? But if you do shoot bullets everywhere, you'll shatter the glass walls, the glass will fall on the floor and create a whole swath of glass sharded floor that if you walk across, you'll damage your feet even more and screw you over later on in the game. So it's just, there's a lot of depth to the game like this. You pretty much have access to all the floors at the get-go, although some areas will take a little more effort to get to at the beginning. So you're actually really trying to work it out. You're basically just like John McClane. You're faced with a set of decisions. Do I go to this floor? Do I go to that floor? Where do I go for help first? And you can even, just like in the movie, end up taking their detonators and end up screwing over their plans even more. But I just like it from that. It's one of those classic games you have to work out. Some people dismiss the game entirely because it's too hard, and it is. For instance, it's very hard, when you've got the pistol, it's very hard to fire anything other than like a up, down, left, right, or diagonal shot. So sometimes with the machine gun, you have to just do a bit more of a spin to the whole thing. But once you sort of get to grips with that and accept the game's difficulty, you just do what you can to just try to work out the best patterns, work out which locations to go to, where to go to help, the easiest way to take out the terrorists. Just basically get a plan of the whole floor layout in your mind and figure out which are the best places to go to get the best sort of items. And every so often in the game, there are also these nice little cinematics that keep playing, of course. Given the fact that this is the early 90s with the cinematics, you're basically seen with a single shot of some of the characters with some text appearing underneath. But this is good stuff, and they actually change depending on it. So it's like each time you play, you can do your own slight little variation on how the movie Die Hard actually went. So yeah, a hard game, but a lot of fun, and just very true to the source material, and just a fun feeling to capture the excitement, even for a pretty old game that had a lot of technical limitations, that was basically trying to replicate a Hollywood blockbuster. Even with the technical limitations, they just tried to go at the core of what the Die Hard experience was about, and that was a guy faced with huge odds who had a lot of choices to make. And I think they really did succeed at that. Even if you could probably find nitpicks with the game, but same with any game. Alright, time for a change of pace, as I often do. This show can change moods pretty quickly, and I think I'll just flip on some pretty interesting music from a nice indie game I was playing recently. Have a listen. Well, that was a nice tune. That was actually called Cold Reader by the Voodoo Trombone Quartet. And it appears in the video game Tiny and Big Grandpa's Leftovers by Black Pants Game Studio. You see, the music you just heard wasn't actually created for the game itself. The developers of Tiny and Big decided that instead of creating the music themselves or licensing it from major labels or whatever, they'd actually focus on indie bands. So they handpicked a selection of indie music from goodness knows where and just created this whole soundtrack of the game, just composed of all these not very well known but, you know, very skilled indie bands. And obviously, as you just heard, what there was the Voodoo Trombone Quartet. It's very nice, and they've got quite a diverse selection of music in the game, and indeed you listen to the music in-game by actually picking up cassette tapes. As soon as you pick up a cassette tape, you suddenly start listening to the music is added to your collection, and as you walk around listening to the music, you can actually switch between different tracks just by hitting the keys on your keyboard so that you can listen to the whole track as ever you want, and if there's still a track in the music that you want to still listen to, you got to just find that tape. It's actually kind of funny because at one stage in the game there's a secret room that's actually kind of like a room for the band, but it's kind of funny how these, and that actually one of the indie bands that actually contributes music to the game actually created a music video based on the game, so it's kind of funny how they're all the connections like this. So Tiny and Big is a fun game. It's got a very nice stylized viewpoint to it. It's kind of like European comic book. And it's a little surreal, but also very humorous. And it involves the humorous tale of a guy called Tiny, who's had the underpants that his grandpa left to him stolen and has to go and retrieve his grandpa's underpants. Yes, it turns out, and I'm spoiling things slightly here, but it turns out these underpants are not all they seem, and there is something more to them. He just wants the pants back, and the story just gets kind of surreal and kind of silly and kind of a lot of fun. But it's kind of got a nice, relaxed, fun little tone to it. It's kind of a short game, but it tells a nice little story of him going to try to get back his underpants from this other guy called Big, and who's basically willing to play in a way that's not completely fair in order to stop Tiny from getting his underpants back. And so there's a nice little back and forth between the protagonist and the antagonist, and there's a lot of stuff going on. But the key thing with the game, the key gameplay mechanics, is the fact that you can actually slice gigantic blocks of stone in two. You're basically in a sort of a desert level that contains old ancient stone monuments and great big cliffs and bridges and everything. And your basic main power is this weapon that basically slices these things in two. So it's like you might see a pillar and you slice it at the base and the pillar would fall over. Or you see this great big wall in front of you and you just slice diagonal across the wall and then you jump on the bottom of the slice and then just walk up the incline. A couple of times I've had this obstacle in my way and I sliced it in a particular way and the top fell off, and then I'm going walk up to it and saying, damn it, I can't make this jump far enough. The level designer didn't even bother to make this incline low enough for me to jump over. And then I think for a second and realize, oh wait a sec, I cut this. Technically I'm the level designer. Oh well. And I just really like it how the game just gives you all these scenarios of slicing rock, and sometimes you'd slice something and it would fall over and crush you and you'd go, okay, maybe I need to do that again. But generally, with a lot of gameplays, they've got a mechanic and they try to reuse it over and over, and sometimes it gets a little boring, but Tiny and Big just keeps up with coming different scenarios, different environments, and it's always kind of funny to use the laser to slice open all these rocks in all these different ways, and you're dealing with large things here, like a gigantic towering monument, and you can just go, oops, cut it in half, suddenly the top slides off, crashes down, and the top goes rolling off, and you're going, see ya. And then, of course, even after it's collapse, you can make more slices and more slices, so there's all this technology goes behind in all figuring out how you can make all these objects slice more and more. So it's just a fun game, nice sense of humor. You can download and buy it anywhere online, Tiny and Big Grandpa's Leftovers, and just for its atmosphere, its gameplay, its little fun mechanics, and its ability to have a nice selection of indie music, I definitely recommend this game. Well, it looks like that's all we've got time for. I think I'll sign out with another song that appears in that game called The Dirt by William Honda. It's a track with kind of a surreal, weird quality to it, and it's hard to even describe what it's like, but it just caught my mind when I was first playing the game, and I think you might find it pretty good too. So This has been David Collins with BitNote. You can follow us on Twitter at BitNoteFM. We've got a website at bitnotefm.com. And you can remember, you can also listen to us on dublinsouthfm.ie, where we have full episode. You can listen to all the previous episodes and also listen to Dublin South FM live online, so that you can catch me the moment I broadcast the next show. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you listen to some great music. Here's The Dirt by William Honda.